Our scripture reading for today is taken from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14, verses 13 through 21. Hear now the word of the Lord. Jesus withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said, and he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, Gail. Good morning again. Welcome to part 6 of our Illustrated Earth sermon series. I so enjoyed the message that Suzanne brought for us last Sunday about Sabbath. And by the way, I know Carrie Francis is behind me. She can't sneak up on me. I know she's there. We are in July, which every year is the month when we give all of our children's ministry workers the month off, with the exception of nursery. So there's going to be a little chaos here this morning. Are we all okay with that? Just say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to continue. Last Sunday, Suzanne brought a wonderful message for us about Sabbath. And I loved her observation of how even before God had given the law to Israel through Moses, God already begins to teach them about the rhythm of rest and Sabbath in the manna story. As slaves in Egypt, they had never known a day off because slaves don't get vacation time. And this idea of rest is the first thing God begins to instill in his people following their escape. On the 6th day, the scriptures say, they gathered twice as much food, for the Lord has commanded, tomorrow is a day of solemn rest. Of all of the things that they needed to relearn or unlearn from their generations in slavery, the very first thing God teaches them is rest. It's as though a rhythm of Sabbath and rest are required before we can actually learn anything else. As part of the message, Suzanne shared an awesome graphic called a Sabbath Manifesto, which included these 10 awesome tips for slowing down. And a little later that afternoon, Jeannie Flynn shared an awesome post on Facebook, and she said this: "Today's sermon included suggestions on how to observe the Sabbath. I know there were more, but the 2 I saw were drink wine and go outside. From now on, if you need me on a Sunday, I'll be on the deck with Jesus in a dry Riesling. It's about holiness, people." I love that. I love that. And notice the timestamp. Wait, put that back up. Notice the timestamp on the post. 12:19 p.m. Sunday. Church had not been over for 45 minutes, people. Sometimes growth and change in our lives is gradual. It takes place over months and even years, but not last Sunday. It is good to know that the words we share on a Sunday morning are having such a profound and immediate impact on your lives. And Jeannie.
I got it.
Oh, yeah.
Continue on.
Okay. All right. Jeannie, I hope the Riesling was good. Where are you? Was it good? All right. All right. All right. So today we find ourselves in the middle of another food miracle, the feeding of the 5,000. And I suspect this is a story that many, if not all of you, have heard before. And there are many wonderful things you've probably heard said about this story, like how God can take something so meager, something so insignificant as a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish, and how he can somehow make that enough to do something great, like this story about Johnny Karlinchak, from Springfield, Virginia. Not long ago, a huge storm sent a 60-foot oak tree crashing through his neighbor's roof. His neighbor is Alyssa Myers. That was her name. And she didn't have enough money to pay for the insurance deductible to fix her roof. And so Johnny set up a lemonade stand in front of his house. And together with his little sister, Katie, they spent two afternoons baking chocolate chip cookies to sell, in addition to the lemonade, for 50 cents. On the first day, they raised $22.25. I guess someone gypped them a quarter. It should have ended with 50. But the second day, $108. The day after that, $233. And soon they had enough to help Mrs. Myers pay her deductible. I mean, how awesome is that? Lemonade and cookies to help pay for a new roof. Or how about this story? This one is my favorite. This is Dylan Siegel and his best friend, Jonah. Jonah has a very rare liver disorder called GSD, glycogen storage disease. So to help his friend, Dylan wrote a storybook all about it called Chocolate Bar. And that little simple book has helped raise more than $800,000 for researchers and doctors and scientists to find a cure for GSD. That's crazy. Sometimes just small things, a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish, or pink lemonade and cookies, or crayons and paper and an imagination. Sometimes these little things can be enough to do really great things. But there's something else really fascinating about this story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. When Matthew and Mark tell this story, in both Gospels, there is another story about people being fed right before it. It's the story of King Herod. On his birthday, he throws a banquet for his lords, his military commanders, and the leading men of Galilee. And so we have these two stories back to back about two kings feeding two groups of people. We have King Herod and we have King Jesus. And by placing them back to back, it seems that both Matthew and Mark want us to see something in how markedly different these two feeding stories play out. First, it might help a bit to understand who Herod is and who his dinner guests are. Herod holds the title of King of the Jews, although this title is a bit misleading. The Herod in this story is son of Herod the Great. Neither Herod nor his father, Herod the Great, were fully Jewish by birth, and they weren't Jewish by religion either. They were appointed as King of the Jews by the Roman Senate, which doesn't mean much to us today, because being so removed from that political context. And so an illustration might be in order. Imagine for a moment we have the NC State Wolfpack and the UNC Tar Heels. Team Red and Team Blue. I have learned in my 12 years of living in North Carolina that NC State fans tend not to break out in song and rejoicing when UNC wins. And vice versa. But let's just imagine for the sake of our illustration that UNC is the Roman Senate. And NC State, they are the Jewish people. So imagine now if UNC, the blue team, appointed one of their own to be president of NC State, and one of their own to be their next football coach, and one of their own to be their next basketball coach. How do you think that would make NC State fans feel? Dick Jenkins? Not very happy at all. Not very happy at all. Dick Jenkins would, one, he would write a very long Facebook post as to why this is a horrible idea. And two, he quite possibly might die of a massive heart attack just from pure shock. It would be a very sad day. But this is kind of what the situation was like. For the Jewish people, someone who was not theirs was appointed as ruler over them. Now, notice who King Herod has invited to the banquet. Reading from Mark, it says this: on his birthday, Herod gave a banquet for his high officials and military commanders and the leading men of Galilee. The leading men of Galilee. Galilee is an ancient Hebrew region that dates all the way back to Jacob's 12 sons in the Old Testament. The Israelites gave Galilee its name, and it was part of the region of the tribe of Naphtali, one of the 12 ancient tribes of Israel. This is a place of Jewish and Hebrew significance. Jesus himself is referred to as the man from Galilee. And here, among Herod's guests at his birthday banquet, are the leading men of Galilee. In studying these two feeding stories, and in looking at the socio-political backdrop, it became quite clear in a couple of different commentary sources that Herod isn't feeding people at his banquet because they need to be fed. He's feeding people because he's ambitious. He's feeding them because he's trying to gain leverage. He's feeding them because it's a good political move that would allow him to gain power over those being fed. It would allow him to more firmly establish his rule over the Jewish people. There is premeditation in his birthday meal. Last week, Suzanne did such an amazing job of involving the kids in the message, having them deliver manna in the form of frosted flakes to everyone in the congregation, which inspired me this morning to attempt to up my game just a little bit and get the kids involved. Now, Noah's not here, is he? He's not here. Grant, are you feeling brave and strong, and do you like donuts? You don't like donuts? All right. Gabriel, are you willing? And Megan, can you go grab me my crayons up there? Oh, what's this little man's name?
Elliot.
Elliot, do you want to be my volunteer? Okay, I've got Elliot. Don't worry, Gabriel. You're still gonna, you know, get your chance for some things here. All right, Gabriel. No, I need that. So, I'm Elliot. Yes, Elliot. I've got three different crayons here. I brought them in three different sizes. Looking at your head, I'm guessing that that's gonna be just about perfect. Elliot is King Herod for us today. And you'll notice that to avoid sort of sponsoring any one particular fast food chain, I assembled the crayons inside out, so no one would know where they came from. But Elliot, come on over here. Come on over here. So let's pretend that it's your birthday. Elliot, how old are you? You're 4 and 5. Which one are you? You're 5. So you just turned 5. Okay, well let's pretend that it's your birthday. So you're about, did you just turn 5 recently?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, let's pretend let's pretend that it's your birthday, and let's just pretend for a moment that all of these donuts, there are cake donuts, chocolate frosting with sprinkles, jelly filled, cinnamon sugar, original glazed, all of these donuts are yours. Do you like this story so far? Yes, okay. All right. Now let's pretend for a moment, Elliot, that of all the kids here, you know that there are two kids, Gavin and Noah Fife, who have the coolest toys of everyone. By the way, what do you think would be the coolest toy to have?
A monster truck toy.
A monster truck. They have a monster truck toy that drives, and it's kid-sized. It's Elliot-sized, okay? So you come up with a plan. What do you think that plan might be?
I had a remote control monster truck.
Oh, you had a remote control monster truck toy. That's pretty awesome. But your plan is you are going to invite Gavin and Noah. Come on up, Gavin and Noah. You are going to invite them to your party to share in your donuts because you think if you share your donuts with them, they might let you ride in their monster truck that is Elliot-sized. Does that sound pretty cool? Yeah, yeah. So, all right, now the three of you, what do you think of this story? Do you like the idea of the three of you getting all of these donuts? Yes, yes, I suspect that you do. However, here's where the bad news comes. That's not going to happen. Because there is another story that we're talking about today of how Jesus feeds people, and it's very different to how King Herod feeds people. And so, King Herod and Noah and Gavin, because you two are a little older, I might need you two to help the most. I want you to take these containers full of donuts, and we are going to go out in amongst the congregation, and you're going to give a donut piece to every kid that's in the congregation here today. But as you give it out to them, I want you to say this to them. I want you to say, I don't want anything in return. Okay? I want you to practice saying that to me right now. Just say that to me.
I don't want anything in return.
Awesome job. I don't
want anything in return.
There you go. And Elliot, your turn. Good job. All right. Gavin and Noah. And Elliot, you walk out with them too, and you're going to help them give out donuts, and to every kid you have to say, I don't want anything in return. Can you do that? All right. Hey, one of you, why don't you go to this side, because there's going to be kids on this side as well. So one of you to this side, and one, there you go. I know it's hard to split up twins like that, but we're going to try. And by the way, kids, please take one piece only. We're going to save the rest for the picnic afterwards, okay? And so, as all of our children are being offered a sugar high, parents, you are welcome. We're going to attempt to continue here, and I'll speak perhaps a little extra slowly at first just to give them a few extra moments to give out the donut pieces. But there is something really important that I want to share with you about these stories. Yeah, raise your hands if you need a donut piece. There you go. That'll help them. Jennifer, nice try. Nice try. As strange as this may sound, there is both a violent and a nonviolent way to feed the hungry. There is both a violent and a nonviolent way to give, to love, and to hold faith. Stanley Hauerwas offers a beautiful reflection on these two contrasting feeding stories in his commentary on Matthew. And he writes this, listen to this. Those who would be Jesus' disciples need to learn how to feed the hungry in a manner that charity does not become a way to gain power over those being fed. Feeding 5,000 men plus all of the moms and children is quite a miracle indeed. But by placing these two stories back to back of two kings, two groups of people, two feedings, it seems that Matthew and Mark are hoping that we will also catch a glimpse of a less obvious but crucially important miracle. The miracle of selflessness. The miracle of laying aside your own agenda. The miracle of living above the politics of ambition and greed and envy that seem to rule the world. By the way, Gavin and Noah, if you guys are done, you can just bring those right on back here. Thank you, guys. Make sure you take one for yourselves too, okay? Take one for yourself. And guess what? I don't want anything in return. All right, Elliot, you can take one too. But yes, I believe that God wants us to take note of this additional miracle, the miracle of living above the ambition and selfishness and greed that just seems to rule the day, the miracle of feeding like Christ and not feeding like King Herod. And perhaps we need to ask ourselves, what might all of this mean in light of the horrible events that unfolded this week? In Baton Rouge, and then again in Minnesota, and then again in Dallas. I just missed out on attending a peaceful protest in Raleigh, downtown Raleigh, on Thursday night, a protest which, not insignificantly, was made possible by the protection of police officers. Police officers protecting the rights of civilians to speak out against police abuse. But I just missed it. But part of me wonders how or in what manner I might have attended. Because there is a way to attend a peaceful protest. There is a way to leverage that and make it all about me. There's a way to attend it violently. There is a way for me to head to downtown Raleigh and have it be all about how it props me up. And how it makes me feel good. And how it might make me look on social media, because we never go to those things without Instagram knowing. But there is also a way to attend a peaceful protest that has nothing to do with me. and everything to do with everyone and with humanity. Nothing to do with me, but everything to do with standing together with men and women in the midst of chaos and sadness and righteous anger and disbelief. Oh, how I long for the second of these options. When King Jesus fed those in the countryside of Bethsaida, it was all about their need and their hunger and his compassion for them. When King Herod fed the leading men from Galilee reclining in his palace, it was all about his title, his ambition, and his own hunger for power. There is a way to participate in Black Lives Matter that is actually all about my life. All about accolades, all about appearances, all about compliments and posturing. But there is another way to participate in Black Lives Matter simply because Black Lives Matter. Oh, how I long for the second of these options. Two kings, two feedings, two radically different approaches to life, and such a relevant story for us today. As soon as church is over, in just a few moments, we're going to head out to the lobby and hopefully welcome some of our neighbors who we've invited from Smithdale Apartments and beyond, and we're going to break bread with them. And it is my hope that we can do so free of any agenda other than love, free of any attempt to gain leverage or power or dominance. I'm going to invite the worship team to come on up right now, and we are going to teach you a song that I believe captures the invitation and welcome of Jesus beautifully well. The opening lyric of the song says, "Come to the water if you're thirsty. Drink of the river, cold and deep. Whatever may come, all are welcome. Every saint and sinner free." And this is a song that's meant to be sung horizontally. It's meant to be sung to each other. It's meant to be sung with, in your mind's eye, you're already picturing someone who needs to hear that. You're picturing someone who perhaps is already out in the lobby from our community. You're picturing someone who is broken, someone who is beaten down, someone who is confused. And you're singing to them, come to the water if you're thirsty. Drink of the river, cold and deep, whatever may come. All are welcome. So as we sing this, and I know it may take a verse for you to sort of get familiar with it, but sing it with our world in your mind. Sing it to them. Let's stand together.